ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। कृष्णं सुचिताया अदाय भगवान लक्षणाय जगमु पदव्या जमुना ततम। The residents hurried toward the banks of Jamuna in search of their dearmost Krishna, following the path marked by his footprints, which bore the unique signs of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Te tatra tatrabhya yavanu kushasani vajopapanani padani vishpate marge gavam anya patantarantare nirikshamana yayur angasavata. The footprints of Lord Sri Krishna, the master of the entire cowherd community, were marked with the lotus flower, barley corn, elephant goad, thunderbolt, and flag. My dear King Parikshit, seeing his footprints on the path amongst the cow's hoofprints, the residents of Vrindavan rushed along in great haste. Purport. Srila Sanatan Goswami comments as follows. Since Lord Krishna had passed along the path sometime previously, why weren't his footprints, which were surrounded by those of cows, cowherd boys, and so on, smudged over and brushed away? Why hadn't his footprints been obliterated by all those beasts and birds of the Vrindavan forest? The answer is indicated by the word Vishpati, master of the cowherd community. Since Lord Krishna is actually the wealth of all living beings, all the inhabitants of the forest of Brajbhumi would carefully preserve his footprints as great treasures, the very ornaments of the earth. Thus, no creature within Vrindavan would ever walk upon Lord Krishna's footprints. Would like to first welcome Mother Jogini, who has come all the way from New Vrindavan to give us her association. She is the virtuous wife of Sri Galim Prabhu, who is dear to everyone's heart. Also like to welcome Malini and Gadadhar. The future of this planet Earth lies in the hands of these little Vaishnava devotees of the Lord. Everyone kindly give them your natural love and devotion, and it is our desire to serve you so that you become very happy here in the great city of Radha Gopinath Mandir. The residents hurried toward the banks of Jamuna in search of their dearmost Krishna, following the path marked by his footprints, which bore the unique signs of the personality of Godhead. The footprints of Lord Krishna, the master of the entire cowherd community, were marked with the lotus flower, barley corn, elephant goad, thunderbolt, and flag. My dear King Parikshit, seeing his footprints on the path among the cow's hoofprints, The residents of Vrindavan rushed along in great haste. Sanatan Goswami very carefully analyzes this verse. Such a wonderful explanation he gives. How the natural question would be, Krishna had 900,000 cows that he took care of on behalf of Nanda Maharaj. And there were also so many thousands upon thousands of cowherd boys that would go into the pasture grounds with him every day. And Krishna would lead the way. He would be in the front. Everyone would follow him. So, 900,000 cows and so many thousands and thousands of cowherd boys, plus all the other beasts in the forest. It is a great wonder that Krishna's footprints, with all of their signs, were still clear in the ground. It is described by Sanatana Goswami here that the natural love and respect of every one of the residents of Vrindavan was so much in consciousness of Lord Sri Krishna that no one would dare to in any way disturb the footprint of Sri Krishna. Everyone would very, very carefully walk around his footprints. Tadiya, knowing that his footprints were none different than him. It is a fact that the property or the remnants, the prasad of the Supreme Personality of Godhead or his intimate devotees are respected and in fact worshipped as none different than the person. How is this? Because the nature of spiritual energy is anything that is touched by Krishna, anything that is intimately utilized or touched by his devotee, becomes surcharged with their divine presence. And just as there is no difference between the energetic and the energy, similarly, all those things in relationship to Krishna are none different than Krishna. Therefore, the residents of Vrindavan, they knew that to step on Krishna's footprints is like to step on Krishna. So they very, very carefully they would avoid committing any offense. And similarly, the murti in the temple, we offer them their sandals and we respect their sandals as them. In many temples, you cannot take the large murti on procession. Oftentimes, they take the sandals of the Lord on procession. And it is understood that Krishna is going on that procession through his sandals. In the same way, we find in Ramayana, when Bharat Maharaj went to the forest of Chitrakoot, and he pleaded with Sri Ram, with all of the residents of Ayodhya, please, kindly, come home. Come back to Ayodhya. Bharat Maharaj, his natural love was he was willing and ready to make any sacrifice for the pleasure of his beloved Lord. Let me remain for all these long years in exile in the forest, and you go back and you enjoy the kingdom with Sita. But Sri Ramchandra, he had his divine lila to perform. So he said, I cannot go back because it would be a disgrace to the good name of our father. That was the external reason. But the internal reason is he had advented to kill Ravana he had invented to show the virtuous qualities of Sita. He had invented to give a chance for great devotees like Hanuman, Sugriva, to render the most magnificent service. And if he would have went back to Ayodhya, these opportunities would not be given to glorify such great souls. And of course, as Sri Ram often said while he was living in Chitrakoot, that these pleasurable forests, just living in a little straw hut with all of the forest animals and all of the trees and the beautiful Mandakini Ganga and all the great saints, sages and sadhus all around, this is much more pleasurable than Ayodhya. And the intimacy of his relationship with Sita and Lakshman was at its highest point in these simple surroundings of Chitrakoot. So he refused to go back to Ayodhya. But Bharat knew that if Ram's feet, whatever they touch, they become none different than Sri Ram. So he asked him to place sandals upon his feet. And taking those sandals and putting them in a royal palanquin, there was a grand procession to bring the sandals of Ram back to Ayodhya. And then Bharat Maharaj put those sandals on the throne and worshipped them. He would fan them with chamara fan. He would offer them all respects. He would pray to them whenever there was a decision to be made. In this way, he knew that because Ram's feet had touched them, they are none different than Ram. You see, in bhakti, this principle of faith is very important. Because Krishna says in Gita, Ye yathamam prapadyante tam tathaiva bhajamyaham mama bart manu bartante manusya paratasaravasha. That as you approach Krishna, as you approach his devotees, as you approach the paraphernalia, the tadiya, that is how Krishna will reciprocate with you. Of course, we know that the deity of Radha Gopinath is the actual forms of Sri Sri Radha Krishna manifesting in this wonderful way simply to attract our hearts and allow us to render service with our body, mind, and words 24 hours a day. But similarly, the footprints of Guru Maharaj that are sitting on Vyasasan, the picture of Guru Maharaj, the murti of Guru Maharaj, we should know, if we have faith in our prayer, in our offering of respect, we will realize how they are none different than the person of the spiritual master. It is a fact. And it is proven here that the residents of Vrindavan, they were so conscious of Krishna in every aspect of Krishna at all times, even in the most ordinary activities of the day. Rupa Goswami explains that even in one's most normal, ordinary activities that one performs during the day, one should be very, very, very cautious and careful to perform it for the pleasure of Krishna. Because Krishna, the Paramatma, is watching. He is the witness of everything we do, everything we say. Whether we are on the altar offering puja whether we're washing the floors, washing the toilets, whether we're just walking down the street, driving a car, taking bath, whatever we're doing, Krishna's there. And he's simply waiting. How are you going to perform this duty for my pleasure? And if we are conscious, I am driving this car for Krishna, therefore I must drive with great care and attention. I cannot be mindless. I am washing this toilet for Krishna, as the servant of the servant of his servants. Therefore, how I should do it with the utmost care and attention, so that not even a particle of it remains unclean. I am taking this bath for Krishna, for his pleasure. Cleanliness is next to godliness. We are not just bathing a body. We are cleaning ourselves so that we are fit to be an offering to Krishna when we come into the temple in the morning. What are we doing? The conch shell blows. The doors of the altar are opened. Radha Gopinath are giving their splendid darshan. And what is our position? We are simply an offering to him. Our body, Krishna, whatever it is, it's an offering to you. It's clean. It's living purely. Here. Every morning we are offering foodstuffs, the Mangalarti Bhog offering. We are also offering our lives. We offer our words by singing his glories. We offering our bodies by dancing before him. We offer our minds by keeping our attention focused on his beautiful form. We offer our life by coming in an attitude, in a mood of servitorship. Everyone in the temple is performing puja. The pujari on the altar may be offering the incense and the chamara and the ghee lamp, but everyone in the temple is offering their body, minds, words, and life. So when we bathe in the morning, what are we doing? We are preparing this body, for whatever it's worth, to be an offering to Krishna. When we are putting on our clothes, such an ordinary thing as putting on your clothes, we should not be unconscious, we should not be mindless. We are putting on our clothes to offer this clean, simple dress upon this body so that we can come properly before God and dedicate our life as an offering at his lotus feet. When we eat prasad, we should be very mindful and conscious. It is a sacrament. It is a very holy and one of the most important spiritual activities in the path of bhakti, to honor prasad. We should be conscious that this is Krishna's mercy. This is none different than Krishna. How infinitely, inconceivably merciful he is, that he's expanded himself so that I can eat him and taste him, and he wants me to do it. Why? Because everything connected to Krishna is spiritual energy. And because I'm taking this food, which is invoked with his spiritual energy within it, I will become spiritually energized, and with this spiritual energy, how much wonderful service this body mind can do in Krishna's service. Ordinary food, you cannot engage properly in devotional service. It's not possible. Why? Because physically you are energized by the food you eat. If the food you eat is material, the energy will be material, And how will you engage properly in spiritual activities? But if you eat prasad, your whole body is being energized with Krishna's divine mercy, surcharged with spiritual energy. Why do we surcharge our body with spiritual energy? So we can offer that energy, utilize all of it in the service of the energetic. Sri Radharani is the energy of God. Sri Krishna is the energetic source. The nature of the energy is always to be engaged in the loving service of the energetic. So whatever energy Krishna gives us, we must be very careful, very cautious, and very conscious to use it for Him. So when taking prasad, this should be our consciousness. Not just eating, not just enjoying, but being conscious of how I am being sanctified, how I am being filled with the energy of Krishna, and how I will utilize all of this energy. I will not eat too much, I will not eat too little, so all of this mercy of Krishna can be utilized to its utmost for Krishna's pleasure. What to speak of when we are chanting the holy names, or when we are sitting in the Bhagavatam class. As you approach Krishna, Krishna rewards you accordingly. If we're sitting in class thinking, only 15 more minutes till it's ended, how I have to sit and tolerate listening to the Bhagavatam every morning for so long. I would like to go to sleep. Huh? I would like to talk all nonsense with someone, anyone, anything. But somehow or other I'm here, and no one will criticize me because I'm sitting here, but I really wish it would end fast. If that is your consciousness, what will you get out of the Bhagavatam? What you'll get out of it is your desire will be fulfilled. It will end, and that's all you get. Yes, it has ended, and that's all the benefits you get. That it's finished. Now do whatever you want. But if we're anxious to hear, anxious to learn, anxious to take this knowledge into our heart and utilize it to inspire us for more and more devotional service, Krishne Sadhamo Pagate Dharma Gyanidi Bisaha Kalonashta Puranako Dhanodita. Then you will know that the Bhagavatam is none different than Krishna himself. Every syllable, every word of the Srimad Bhagavatam, and every syllable of the word of the explanations of the Srimad Bhagavatam are none different than Krishna. This is what it means to always be Krishna conscious. That at every moment, not simply that we are always thinking of Krishna's name and Krishna's lila, that is essential, but that whatever we do, we are very, very conscious of doing it for Krishna. We are very, very conscious of Krishna's presence in every opportunity that we have for devotional service. It is explained here that Thus, no creature within Vrindavan would ever walk upon Lord Krishna's footprints. Although the residents of Brajbhumi are thinking that Krishna is not God, he is just our beloved child, still they loved him so much. They loved everything about him so much. They worshipped with such spontaneous love everything in relationship to Krishna. So, in the path of bhakti, this is most essential factor, to learn how to respect, honor, and worship everything in relationship to Krishna. And of everything, what has the closest relationship with Krishna? His devotees. More than any of the symbols in our temple, the devotees have the closest relationship with Krishna. Mad bhakta puja yadika. Sadhunam hridayam mayam, sadhunam hridayam tvaham. Maranyatena janati naham tebhyam anagopi. Krishna says that the sadhu, the devotee, is more dear to me than my very life. Of all things in relationship to me, there is nothing more dear to me than my devotees. I'm willing to give my life for my devotees. He told the four Kumaras, I'm willing to cut off my arms and legs for my devotees. That is how dear my devotees are to me. So therefore, this is the most important principle for proper spiritual advancement. How to respect everything in relationship to Krishna, which means how to respect in paramount importance Krishna's devotees. How to very, very carefully deal with each devotee. To develop intimate friendships. To cultivate those discussions, to cultivate those activities by which our love for each other can grow. Because if it doesn't, our love for Krishna will not grow. If you cannot love what Krishna loves, you cannot love Krishna. Because that love of Krishna comes only by Krishna's grace, when he is pleased with you. And he has said, Mad bhakta puja vadika, that I love when you serve my devotees more than when you serve me. I will reveal my love to you in proportion to how much you are very, very carefully and conscious reciprocating with the Vaishnavas, headed by Sri Guru Maharaj. So, of all of the activities in devotional service, learning how to properly associate with devotees is one of the five principal factors that Rupa Goswami explains by which we make spiritual advancement. Chanting of the holy names, hearing of the Bhagavatam, associating properly with devotees. What else? Worshipping Tulsi and holy place. Learning how to properly honor and respect the holy places. But of all of them, Rupa Goswami explains, the association of devotees is the most preliminary, fundamental. So we should learn to be very conscious. If a devotee is in need, if a devotee is in trouble, if a devotee requires some seva, whether they are big, big devotees or insignificant devotees, if we are not conscious of what we can do for them, of how we can help them, then we are not Krishna conscious. We're unconscious. Should always be aware, always be very, very alert, and always very eager to know exactly what I can do to serve the Vaishnavas. Not as a body, but as a group of individuals. The philosophy of Krishna consciousness is dvaita, it is personal. How do we serve the Vaishnavas? By learning how to develop these types of Krishna conscious relationships with individuals. with each individual according to our capacity and according to our position. We become their servant by always discussing Krishna, by always trying to encourage and enliven and inspire others to hear the glories of Krishna, to render service to Krishna, by always keeping the instruction in the seva of Guru as the first and foremost principle between us and amongst us. In this way, we can really and properly understand how to serve the lotus feet of the Lord. Because the devotees of the Lord always keep his lotus feet within their hearts, so therefore the devotee is none different than the lotus feet of the Lord. Huh? Anyone who is remembering Krishna, he becomes the seat. He becomes the asana for the lotus feet of the Lord. Therefore none different. So this is how the six Goswamis of Vrindavan has taught us to execute devotional service. By worshipping the lotus feet of the Lord, by offering all respect and seva to all the Vaishnavas. And in this spirit, to chant the holy names. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Thank you very much. Are there any questions?
Is there any difference between food offered to the installed deity, not installed deity, and the picture of the deity? Or is it the same?
Everything has its special variegatedness in Krishna consciousness. There is no doubt that if food is cooked by the hands of a pure devotee, it will have more potency than food cooked by a neophyte devotee, even if it is offered to the same deity. Huh? Because there is variegatedness, even on the transcendental level. So the installed deity of the Lord, who is installed by a pure devotee, that means the food is being cooked by very brahminical people of a very high standard, with great care. So it will have much greater potency than the prasad, which is offered in a lesser consciousness, and not to the murti who has been specifically invited by the acharya to accept our devotion. So they are certainly both prasad. But the potency of taking prasad from Guru Maharaj's personal deity in the temple will be something very great. Prasad means mercy. But mercy has many levels. Therefore, our grihastas may have their small altars at home and they may be offering every day, but they should know that there's a great difference when they come to Guru Maharaj's temple and they take the prasad of the installed Archavigraha of him. It is a very, very great benediction to honor that prasad. There is a great difference too. And it is a regulative principle that such grihastha should come regularly to the temple to bow down and to take prasad. And at the same time worship the deities at home. Just like we go to Jaipur and we bring back the Mahaprasad of Sri Radha Govindaji, Rupa Goswami's original murti, installed by Vrajanab. Oh. There is a very special personal ras that is within that prasad that devotees relish like anything. Huh? What to speak of the deities that all of our god brothers and god sisters are worshipping with their heart and their soul and their life. So many hundreds are coming and dancing and chanting before them. What is the potency of the prasad of this form of God? It is indescribable. It is an illusion, according to our parampara, to just think, well, I have my little deities at home, there's no need to go to temple. We require that association. We require that mercy regularly, desperately. Any other questions?
Similar question was discussed a couple of months ago in the Bhagavatam class. We were talking about the different levels of prasadam. And there was some controversy as to how can there be different kinds of or levels of potency of prasadam. Then one conclusion we reached was the principle of yayathamam prapadyante, that Krishna accepts the prasad, no doubt, even if it is offered by a neophyte devotee. But because there is less devotion, so he also accepts with that much lesser devotion, so it has that much less potency. So now the question of deities also comes. So does it mean that the potency of prasadam is dependent not only on the status of the devotee who is offering and cooking, but also on the status of the deity? So it is on both. That is, whether it is installed, whether it is authorized, like that. So on both factors, it is dependent.
No doubt.
Also, it is said that we cannot directly offer to Krishna. We have to offer to Guru Maharaj, and Guru Maharaj offers to Krishna, because we are impure. So when we offer, Guru Maharaj purifies the offering and gives it to Krishna. So even if a neophyte devotee offers to Guru, and if a pure devotee offers to Guru, then both, ultimately it is Guru who is offering, so why should there be a difference in the level of potency?
There is still a difference in the sense that if Guru is not very pleased with how you are offering it to him, he will not be very pleased with how he's offering it to Krishna. He wants only the best for Krishna. And if he's very pleased with your consciousness of how it's being offered, he'll be that much more pleased at Krishna. This is very nice. Just like if you are Guru and I just give you something very sloppy, you say, Krishna, take this. Are you pleased to offer it to him? You offer it the best you can, but still, if I carefully give you off something, Krishna, take this. You are very pleased. So to the degree our consciousness is Krishna conscious, to that degree, it is pleasing to Guru and Krishna. Even if we are neophytes, if we are simply very careful and very sincere, then the spiritual master, out of his kindness, will take great pleasure in offering that to Krishna. So don't worry whether you're advanced or not, but just be very careful and very sincere in how you're offering. And then, by giving pleasure to Guru and Krishna, the remnants will have great power.
Maharaj, which is more powerful, the Mahaprasadam of the pure devotee or the Mahaprasadam of the deities?
You see, Mahaprasad of the pure devotees is both. Because will he take anything without offering it to the deity? Huh? So if you have Mahaprasad of the deity, that is all-powerful. But if you have Mahaprasad, Maha-Mahaprasad, then you have
all powerful.
Whatever is offered by a neophyte devotee is accepted by the Guru. How will a neophyte devotee will understand whether he was sincere or no? Because the Guru Maharaj just accepted. He doesn't refuse it also.
What is your motivation? Are you honestly doing the best you possibly can as a service for the pleasure of your spiritual master? Then that is sincere. Are you just rushing through it to get it done because it has to be done? That is not very sincere. Are you doing it just so that people will think, oh, she, Prem Leela is a very good cook. I will become famous. That is not very sincere. But if you are really carefully, honestly trying to make it the best you possibly can, because it will please my spiritual master, it will please the Vaishnavas, and it will please Krishna. That consciousness, that desire is sincere. You know when you're sincere. When you're doing things carefully, according to the instruction. If you're doing it against the instruction, obviously you're not very sincere. If you're following the principles, if you're chanting your rounds every day, and you're performing your service the way your guru wants to be done, in such a way that the devotees will find pleasure, that is sincerity. It is not a mystery whether we are sincere or not. It is very clear, very easy to understand.
Especially sometimes for a pure devotee or guru. When you are cooking bhoga, sometimes you are asked to prefer for, especially for a pure devotee or guru maharaj. That time should we offer to the deities or directly we should offer it to the pure devotee?
Depends what the devotee wants. If the devotee wants you to offer it to the deities, it's an offense to give it to him without.
After having a strong desire to serve Vaishnavas or progress in spiritual life, it is not being possible. So you can suggest some way.
What is not possible?
It is not being possible. Actually, after having a strong desire also to serve the Vaishnavas and progress in spiritual life, but I find that it is not being possible. I'm just...
What is not being possible?
To serve Vaishnavas, I am not satisfied. After coming to the temple...
You are sitting here in Srimad Bhagavatam. That is serving the Vaishnavas. You have to analyze within your own mind, are you actually submissively inquiring and acting accordingly? Are you doing what the Vaishnavas want? Or do you want to do what you want? And you want the Vaishnavas to accept it? That is not service on a very high level. That service will never satisfy you. When we do what we want for the Vaishnavas, that's a low grade of service, will never satisfy the heart. But when we're willing to make sacrifice and strive to follow the instruction and please the Vaishnavas, that service will definitely, most definitely satisfy. So if we're not satisfied, it means we have too many of our own selfish motives.
Haribol, thank you very much.